It's fair, I'm gonna be frustrated still. He said,
"Are you too hot?"
This is all what. And so now again, when I got there, it really just.
I'm happy to do that.
They were like, we questioned how much I'm what everything you wanted to know. I mean, when it the book is just going to be a but,
that's why that's hard to do.
Hola, bien feo, ¿verdad? Aquí adentro. Mira, ahí está la máquina.
All right, we will start in probably about 5 minutes. All right, is that right? And talk about yourself.
But Robert, honestly, if you see this, you can actually be with Robin. It's like a beautiful,
Good to see folks, and I hope the the space works for folks and the little bit of chain upgrades out there. So, we good to start?
Yep.
All right. So, we call the meeting to order. Start with introductions.
Chuck Adams,
present.
Robert Arnold,
present.
Erwin Marios,
here.
Leroy Glenn,
here.
Bill Bloom,
here.
Anna Brenzuela,
here.
Frederick Chevalier is on leave of absence. Ed Shippey. Zachary Davenport is on leave of absence. Elaine Flores,
present.
Elise Griffith. Jesus Guillen.
Yeah.
Ron Hernandez.
Present.
Lee Jewell.
Present.
Thomas Noble.
Present.
Nali.
Here.
TJ Lee Miyake.
Here.
Helen Lynn's on a leave of absence. Derek Matt.
Here.
Marco Montenegro. Jan Osterson. Irma Sarat.
Here.
Charles Rowe.
Here.
J.P. Soto, Richard Sullivan, Laura Thomas,
here,
Manuel Vasquez, White Town staff, Mark Molnar, and if we can do public, let's start with the gentleman on the far left.
No, I just bring up Leroy to raise his hand and said he's having an issue.
Thanks, TJ. Can you hear us, Leroy?
It's very difficult for those of us online to hear you. A couple more comments in the chat. So I don't know what exactly is going on with the mic, but it's just really hard. It's very echoey, and the sound is being just eaten by the microphone.
Yeah, for sure.
So if we could do intros for members of the public. Mark Peter.
Jeffrey Brooks, primary care at home.
Well, Lance Toma, San Francisco Medical Center and the HIV providers.
Matt Foreman, AIDS Legal Referral Panel.
Do we get everybody? Thank you. All right, those of you who are online, which let's do quick introductions. Irma.
Hi, this is Irma with I'm actually a co-chair of the council.
Hey Irma, thank you. Nikos.
Hi, I'm Nikos.
I'm just a human, I guess, who does this work.
Thank you. Just. Dominique? Dominique?
Hi everyone, I'm Dominic. I'm with AIDS Healthcare Foundation.
Excellent. Welcome. Did I miss anybody online? Oh, Elise, did you just join us?
Yeah, sorry, I'm on the bus. I'm gonna mute myself.
Okay, no worries.
I'm not disturbing you.
All right, we'll do our best to project our voices and go from there. Did I miss anybody else online? All right, let's review today's agenda.
Before we do that, just a quick reminder to for members of the public, please do sign in.
Great. Thank you. And those of you online, again, give us the prods when you can't hear us. We'll do our best to hear our voices. Looking at today's agenda, any changes? All right, seeing none, approved by consensus. Okay. Quick look at last month's minutes. Let's know if you see any edits. Yeah. All right, any announcements from members? Any announcements for staff?
We want to remind folks that the May full council meeting has been moved up a week, so it'll be Monday's meeting.
And we have canceled the May hearing meeting.
Thank you. Yeah, any announcements to come? Any public comment? Okay, seeing none. We got staff out. Sorry, it was a little bit out of order there. So general updates. Bill, you want to go first?
Sure. Mark, were we just going to leave on the table real quick to not this year? I guess we have time now.
We do have time, Mayor. Oh, I'm sorry. You can update the agenda. Sorry, there's too many things going on without Kira here. Kira is actually on jury duty, and so we're removing the COLA update. And instead, in that place, moving up the care coalition and federal update to replace agenda item number 10.
So moving an item, we're not adding an item.
Exactly. So we'd like to get out of here early because there is now no longer an agenda item 13 and been moved to agenda item 10. So it'll be after co-chair election. It'll be, sorry, not 13, 14. It'll be care coalition and federal update, then the break, election results, cabinet update, post break.
Do we need to vote on that, or do we just announce it? Hereby announced. All right. Any opposition to that? Seeing none, I'm voting by consensus. Great. Thank you, Bill, for your flexibility and obvious nudging on what we actually are in. Go for it, Bill.
You got it. Can the folks that are joining virtually hear me okay?
Yes,
Yes,
you're very
we can
clear.
hear.
Okay, great. So
Yes, I can hear you.
stay put to front. So the first is the good news that was already announced, which is that you guys remember that we were going to be potentially have a cut to the general fund portion of our HIV health services. And you remember you always went through the prioritization rather the allocation formula. You revisited that. I'm going to assume thanks to really strong community activism that was taken off the table. So I emailed, I asked the planning council email, so you should have all gotten that. But we still are off the table, which means the only reduction we've had has been in the training area, which is about 55K and a few other small things. So we're starting to see that go, but relative to other sections within the DPH and other divisions, we were very fortunate to see that. Does anyone have any questions on that? All right, so the last part of it, the review is still in process. You can see the timeline there. There's kind of a larger structural change. So there's a health outreach team that works primarily with people experiencing homelessness and also street-based programs that was previously in a whole different city agency department, Department of Emergency Medicine, and it's moving over to DPH. And actually, although it says here that it's going to primary care, that was actually a mistype in our information, it's moving over to whole person integrated care, which is our program that works with folks that are either experiencing homelessness or lack of housing instability for who, like, hanging with primary care and a place that says it works. So they were involved before, which is for people to know, it's a larger effort to kind of streamline those services. I'm hopeful that it will be a little more service oriented to the client, a little bit less when the city police and other folks are involved. So hopefully that will probably kind of more clients. Any questions on that? Okay, so funding updates, it's basically status quo. One of our program officers, one of the three of them, thinks mid-May maybe. The reason is the presidential kind of box of budget management has added another layer onto the approval process that it just has kind of stopped all of it. So we don't know our final word for EHE or Ryan White Part A. We are hopeful that it will be flat funded, and that seems to be the indication. Of course, the Part A will take the hit because they put a new form one. So but hopefully it won't be greater than the working one. A bit of good news, which I guess I can steal the thunder if Manuel is not here. Mayor's Office of Housing and Community Development, MOHC, they're the ones that manage housing opportunities for people with AIDS, APWA. They did get the award, and you can see there the total award was $7.423 million, and that was an increase of $340,000, about 4.5%. Any questions on that? Wish us all luck. Starting on Wednesday and Thursday, we will have the joy and reminder of exciting visit by our federal partners for Right Away Park City. Please be kind to my staff, it's barely gruesome time. So we'll be a lot happier come Friday at 4 p.m. So that's what we'll be doing. And also just an announcement again, the national conference, the All Hearts, Right Away Park ADC, EF, and EHG in DC, 8-4 through 8-7. And I understand you guys are going to be well represented by Irma and by Lee. So hope they'll be reading back on the invitation. Just a reminder, we also have our quarterly meetings. We just one was just held, it's very well attended. This is mostly providers for primary care and medical case management. You guys are, of course, welcome to come join us, see what it's about. If you'd like to join an ongoing basis, you can contact that. And then the trainings, you can just use it the last of the trainings, and that was what was covered with 55K. But we do have a few more trainings, encourage folks to send their staff, or if you are a member of the planning council, and you're ongoing, you can also reach out to Beth or to me. Any questions?
All right, thank you. Do you want to go next, or do you want to wait? Please go.
So this is a really quick publications update. The lawmakers have continued to move forward with the publications process. The full budget has been approved because there's EHS negotiations that are still going on in Congress. On April 21st, the Senate Appropriations Committee on Labor, Health, and Human Services, Education, and Related Agencies, which is provided by the White held its fiscal year 2027 budget hearing. There's a couple of other updates which I think are pretty interesting. On April 16th, the Department of Health and Human Services, HHS Secretary Kennedy, he He appeared before the House Ways and Means Committee and Appropriations LHHS Subcommittee and defended the appropriate the administration's fiscal year 2027 budget request to Congress. Remember, the president presents his budget to Congress first, and Congress then can take some of that or not be able to meet their budget through the House and Senate. But what was his appearance? He included a controversial proposal to cut health spending, including proposed changes to HIV and hepatitis prevention and treatment programs at the CDC and Health Resources and Services Administration, HRSA. During the hearing, the Secretary Kennedy revealed that he intends to overhaul membership of the U.S. Prevention Services Task Force, an influential expert advisory panel that helps to determine which preventive services are provided at no cost to consumers. And this kind of follows along the administration's potentially unlawful overhaul of BTI's IP membership. That's the U.S. Preventive Services Task Force. So what this really is these changes are part of the administration's policy to overhaul health policy and programs. This is what they wanted to report to, and this is how they see the HIV programs going forward. Any questions? Thank you.
Thank you, Lee. Leroy.
Great, thank you. So my name is Leroy Blaya. I use he, him, and his pronouns. I'm the California Department of Public Health Part B HRSA State Administrator Representative on that council. And I also coordinate EHE initiative across the state. And I'm grateful to actually be supporting our integrated planning process that's a statewide process as well. You see here that the our OA voice was just released today on our website, April 26th, and you can read that on your own. My one big update to you all is that HRSA and CDC released today just a reminder of our requirement to submit our integrated plan on behalf of our co-author jurisdictions like San Francisco, the San Francisco EMA. So what we are going to do soon is to release our concurrence document, a review document to you all to review and comment on, along with instructions and a comment form to fill out. So our integrated plan, statewide integrated plan, as you all know, is a short, a succinct document that we released first in 2022. We are doing and as you're seeing the OA voice, our OA voice is actually oriented around the six social determinants of health that are in our integrated plan. So we are, our investment in doing a syndemic work, addressing HIV as a syndemic with hepatitis C and other STIs through a social determinants of health lens is a long-term investment. So we are refreshing our plan, not redoing the plan. We've updated the data and we've added another priority population. This is really coming from local health jurisdictions like yourself, just noting how critical it is to focus on people aging with HIV or older adults with HIV as a priority, given the evolving environment and one of our largest groups that is a priority population in California that we have not included as a priority population in the last round. So we are adding them as a priority group, and that is being defined in many ways in many jurisdictions and conversations. You've done your own assessment, and we are going to be sponsoring some community engagement to develop the understanding of what it means to prioritize older people with HIV in the state by having some community conversations about that. So more about that to come. But back to the document you'll be receiving. Once again, it's a succinct document. It discusses why we do syndemic work through a social determinant of health lens. This is a sort of a one, two, three different types of requirements, a significant check mark that this allows San Francisco to achieve with this plan under the umbrella of the state plan. And it allows you to do your own work and your own planning and implementation locally. So The document will be coming to you soon. I'm very grateful for your review and any comments. This is the same document that you all, well, it's a very similar document to the and framing to the document that you concurred with 5 years ago. So I'm happy to take any questions about that if you have any.
I have a hand in the room, Lee.
Thanks for that. I have a question about the OA's HIV loss web page, paragraph that you have in your report. You said you updated the HIV loss web page, and I'm curious about criminalization of HIV in California. Can you give us an update on that?
The criminalization of HIV in California. So we do have an updated website that focuses on that. And actually, I'll have to get back to you on the nuances of that. But it was a refresh of the web page that there were some sort of dated references to HIV criminalization laws. And we were looking for a way to actually update the information and data. Some of it was dated, and we've refreshed it. So I can give you more information at the next meeting, or I'll be sure to actually send an update and an answer to your question, Lee, through our so with my next report.
Thank you so much.
Yeah. Great question, though.
Any other questions for
Aaron, do you have a question for people? You have a good question for Bill in regards to this. And that is, Mayor Lori just introduced underlined his score at cutting something like $3 million worth of services that was earmarked for aging. And as we know, folks that are HIV positive in San Francisco is an aging population. And while those services aren't necessarily HIV specific, it will affect the HIV community pretty sharply. Even now, even as we are working on sort of the creating a collaboration with the Department of Aging and those services and services for folks with disabilities. The concerns I have is that this funding cut will collapse what is already rationally put in place between HIV services and aging. I just wanted to know both on a state level, but also in response, but the city level, like awareness is about where those cuts will sit and how best, is there any sort of strategy for strategizing those cuts? Are we going to get support from the state to not have those cuts impact us as potentially badly as it goes.
I'll just say it was very hard for me to understand the question. I'm so sorry. I can't hear very well from the testimony that's far away from the microphone. But I'm going to suggest this. The state has, so the plan that you're going to get is sort of a short, succinct statement that sort of names priority populations. It doesn't actually talk a lot about what that means, what it means to actually be a priority population. And we do have something called an implementation blueprint that that is meant to be a companion document to the plan you're gonna be reviewing. And it has 156 activities. There are special population notes that are part of it that are linked to, and one of the things that we're gonna be doing is developing some special population notes for aging populations in California, people that are living with HIV that are aging. I would say that there are a myriad of issues that are kind of be wrapped up in the special population notes, including pressures for shifting, cuts in budgetarily. And what the state will emphasize is that it's critical to continue to focus on this population with the resources available. And so there are I would say that this is sort of a place where community members that are interested in highlighting specific needs for a specific population and to do more and fund more in this area, this would be a place where you would see sort of the collection of suggestions for that, and just another thing to cite in as you develop, you know, more programs in this area. As for specific plans for this, you know, ours is sort of the Office of AIDS suggestions within this plan, and there's sort of a larger master plan for education or education for aging that we cite. There are in that master plan for aging, there's a lot of initiatives that it emphasizes, including, you know, building equity for populations that are aging across the state, that the aging isn't experienced equally for all populations across the state, that the aging may actually be something that is an earlier, more experienced for people of color, for example. So I would suggest that there's a variety of tools to advocate for or to suggest stronger programming in this area. And the nuance of your question, I think I lost, but I'm hoping that that kind of addressed some of it at least. We're trying to develop more of an awareness in the Office of AIDS for this particular population by actually kind of centering it as a priority population, so that we expect that there's going to be a lot of conversations in communities across the state as part of the implementation of our plan in 2027. And we probably love to host, you know, a conversation in San Francisco as well.
Am I speaking loud enough for you guys that it is virtual, or should I go up in the front of you? Can you hear
that,
me?
That works, Bill. You're speaking loud enough.
So the answer, there are every department to let health services agents that has disability and aging services. The mayor directed every department to make cuts. And then he also prioritized a set of things. So what was priority was direct service to clients. So I don't know all the details of DASA's budget, but from my understanding, we meet monthly with them, just and we're kind of what I said that you know. But my sense is indirect services, but I am a little bit conjecturing based on a conversation we need to go back to it. But likely it was not direct services that I can give you confirmation of that. But you know, they took a large charity health services in. Pretty unique for us.
Thank you.
Very
thank you. Yes, kind of a last question, and Tommy, can you excuse me a little if I lose my voice? For many years, many of the people growing up with HIV, and in particular the HIV long-term survivors, we've been trying to see who is going to be taking care of these communities. I asked any of you, I've been asking for to go to all the HIV agencies and organizations and see which kind of services do they have for people growing older with HIV and HIV long-term survivors, or are we gonna be supporting the senior agencies that they are opening the doors with new chapters for HIV people growing older? I don't have the answer to that, but maybe I'm trying to ask you and everyone.
Was that a question directed at me?
If you have any idea or comment about it, I just would love to hear what you.
Okay, so from what I understand of the question, and I didn't hear it all, but I'll try my best. So the. What I'm going to suggest is that there's a hearing today actually at a Senate hearing that is focused on aging issues, and one of the sort of subheadings is the LGBTQI focus and people living with HIV. And one of the things that I know hit the testimony from the Office of AIDS focused on some that there's a couple things. One is that there are sort of unique services for people living with HIV that need to be developed that are related to HIV services, and there's a system of care in aging that needs to have more development of the awareness of what it takes to actually serve people living with HIV, because it's a smaller proportion of the population that's served in aging services. So that's highlighted, and I know the testimony that was happening today, but I don't have an answer to that directly either, except that I know that it, thinking about Part A and Part B services, that it probably isn't, you're probably not able to fund all services with Part A and Part B funds for people that are aging with HIV, because some of those services necessarily need to be funded by, you know, aging resources that are there for, you know, all aging populations. And I think that that's kind of going to be one of the key questions about, like, how we fund the most needed services for individuals, and where the services actually get funded from, like what pot of money they get funded from, as Part A and Part B being the funds of last resort, that some of the care aspects may be funded from aging services alone. And that's one of the key questions that's being asked, not only at your planning table, but other planning tables across the state, like what is the right mix there? And then I think there's something else that I wanted to say related to that, that came up at another, I lost it, but I hope that addresses some of what you asked about, but this is, that is a key question to continue to ask.
All right, so for the chat updates, so just we are doing some internal ETE planning with regard to working with our couple cross branches SPs to look into a future state of our next cycle with regards to our plan. And so we'll continue to keep you updated as that continues to roll out. We will be having our frontline worker symposium on board SF August 11th at the LGBT Center. This is an opportunity to support community-based organizations and their staff that have entered into the workforce in the last couple of years. There's just an opportunity there for those folks to get connected to larger systems that they may not have access to. A similar process with regards to Latinos, which is Latinos Americanos Trabajo de Inclusión de Diversidad, Organizaciones y Salud, which I actually thought that was going to be in English before I started reading it. Sorry. But Latinos is an acronym, and the idea is to support the Spanish-speaking workforce that is working at the community-based organizations with the specific stressors that are put on those individuals being bilingual in those particular environments. Folks are often stretched in multiple directions, and there's various levels of trauma that are coming through the clients that the staff are also experiencing. So we've done that a couple of years already, and it has been extremely successful. The STAR program, just to acknowledge that they, the STAR PAP Health Access Point, had a grand opening with regards to providing a space that was more clinically minded so people could access PrEP and get STI treatments and things along those lines. So that was a significant kind of advancement forward with regards to that particular space. They are part of SSCHC, but it's a satellite space over on Pine Street. So it's nice to see that the communities are not having to leave that particular spot in order to access services that are relevant for them. And then counselor certification training, that's obviously happening this week, and that's kind of what you're seeing around you. So the five-day certification process that allows folks to run the point of care HIV, Hep C, and STI test. And that certification process prepares people to deliver results for HIV, Hep C, and STI point of care rapid tests, and help them deal with complex issues around sexuality and substance use. And let me scroll up, ET leadership meeting. We're just, we are planning on doing an STI awareness just due to the fact that April is STI awareness month. And also our wellness initiatives, our wishes team is doing a collaboration with Tenderloin Housing Clinic to offer Hep C workshops and HIV, Hep C, and STI testing in those particular locations. So another opportunity for community folks to get access to those services and communities that they are familiar with. And the Harm Reduction Training Institute is also, we're working with them to provide a more intensive trainings around working with people who use drugs and the opportunity for people to connect with each other over a period of trainings. And then the budget that was put out for the health access points with regards to the reductions that will happen in the next funding cycle for the health access points are listed on the bottom of the page. So that is the chat updates. Any questions on any of those?
The
Harbor Reduction
Training Institute, how often will that run, and will you, like, take folks from
Marin County? It's always, I hope to guess, about the second question, so that should be an issue. How often it will run, I do not know. So we're currently, things are in flux in this particular environment, so, Emily Valadeo on our team is the person who's a good contact person, so reach out to me, I'm happy to help you. It's been nice to kind of see that happen. Any other questions for the CHIP updates? Just for the California Community Planning Group, we are meeting in Monterey in mid-May for our spring in-person meeting. We are having co-chair elections. So JP has been our current community co-chair in that particular space and is terming out with that particular role. So we will have those elections sometime. And the membership committee as well has been looking at the term limits with regards to the body there and how we implement that. So,
anyway. So one quick question I have about the CHIP stuff is, has there been any type of analysis around like what the impacts for like equitable services may be around cuts to different apps from UTH?
I would think the answer is no, but the answer is no. That I have seen. So maybe that somebody else has done it on a different level, but that information has not been either. If it has been done, it hasn't been shared. So nothing that I'm aware of.
Okay. One other quick question. Has there been guidance from the mayor's office on so we know that the HAPs also have like subcontractors, primary contractor and then subcontractors.
Right.
Has there been any type of guidance from DPH or the mayor's office around how that should play out in terms of where cuts are going to fall for subcontractees around the different HAPs?
There has not been any guidance, again, that I have been made aware of. And so specifically what you're referencing is there are 7 health access points. The DPH has 7 contracts with those health access points. Within those, there are multiple organizations, but there's a lead organization and then subcontractors underneath that. So traditionally, that role has fallen to the lead contractor. So just to be transparent on that with regard to the negotiation of the amounts with the subcontractors. So I'm not sure if we would give guidance in that particular and how that would actually play out, but yeah. Did I answer the question, Andy?
Yeah.
Okay. Great. Any other questions? All right. Did we have any other general updates? Any questions for folks online?
All right, so we have a motion from the membership committee to approve a recent act for Johnny Rodriguez. Is Johnny here?
Yes.
So I'd like Johnny, if you wouldn't mind standing up and just introducing yourself, so letting us know why you are joining the council before we go for a vote.
Sure. Hi, everybody. My name is Johnny. I use he, him pronouns. I am a social worker at San Francisco Community Health Center, also a local Aztec dancer, and the current Mr. San Francisco about a month ago. The reason why I'm interested in the council and to work with you all is I come from a generation that we got to see all these different eras of HIV, right? For early years, like experimenting with medication. Now today, where we have a brand of love, wear masks. So I think HIV has always been a major part of my life, and sort of stepping into more leadership in the city, I think it would be a good opportunity for me to share my experiences as a native person and someone who is a Clinton mother to help us make good decisions for folks in the city.
Thank you. Before we go to a hand vote, is there any public comment on this motion to approve Rodriguez as a councilman? All right, all those in favor, please raise your hand. Thank you. All those opposed? Any abstention? Okay. Bill is abstaining. All right. So if you, oh, congratulations. You are. You are now a provisional member subject to the mayor's approval. If you can join us at one of the tables, please do, and certainly join the discussion as well.
Welcome.
All right, fair enough. All right, we did have two nominations to co-chairs, community co-chair. One nomination did have to be withdrawn. All candidates for this position need to be members in good standing when it comes to membership standards, attendance standards as well. So that does leave Derek Mapp as the sole nominee for community co-chair. Before we close nominations, are there any other nominations in addition to Derek? Is there, well, we'll go to the public comment first. Is there any public comment on this item of election to community co-chair division? All right, we'll do another hand vote. All those in favor of Derek Mapp becoming the next community co-chair, please raise your hand. All right, any opposed? Any abstentions? Bill Bloom abstains. Sorry, did Derek get a catcher vote?
Oh.
Okay. Well, the motion carries. Congratulations, you are. So we are now going to the agenda item 14 and the new agenda item 10, Care Coalition and Federal Update.
Moment, I think of this count.
Hi everyone, we're happy to be here, Bill and I, to present our annual Care Coalition and Federal Update. We're expanding our presentation this year to include the role of education, advocacy, and lobbying. You know, we're all very aware of what's going on with cuts at the city, state, and local level. And we thought this would be a great idea to expand our presentation to be real relevant to what's going on. Later on, there's going to be highlights of national HIV advocacy organizations with a focus on communities advocating for emergency AIDS relief or the Care Coalition, which I provide an update for along with Bill. And we're going to ask that you please hold your questions to the end. So, we want to start out with some quotes to frame our presentation about effecting change. Ovid, who was a renowned Roman poet, who was alive just before the Common Era, BCE, and his quote is, dripping water follows out stone, not through force, but through persistence. Gandhi, who was active at the beginning of the 20th century, we may never know what results come from our action, but if we do nothing, there will be no result. And so we think those were important because the inception of the AIDS movement, the largest group was ACT UP, which many of you are familiar with and maybe been involved with in the 1980s, now almost about 40 years ago. And we have a quote from John Lewis, a politician who championed civil rights, including HIV and AIDS, who passed away 6 years ago. He was a big proponent of HIV in the Ryan White program. When you see something that's not right, not fair, not just, you have to speak up, you have to say something, you have to do something. So while a challenge in our current environment to feel empowered, it is crucial that we remain connected to a vast history of struggle and progress. I know many members of our HCPC have been and are activists. Can I see a show of hands of those of you who have done HIV or other health-related educational work with legislators or private funders? Great, thank you. Who has done HIV or other health-related advocacy work with legislators or public or private funders? Great. Who has done lobbying work with legislators or public or private funders? Okay. So this gives you an idea of what makes up the Planning Council here and people in the community. We think it's important for us to define what education advocacy and lobbying is. Education is where we explain to our congressional delegation the current state of play on the ground or the impact of our program on constituents. That is considered education, where we're educating. Advocacy is when we argue in favor of our cause or an idea, that's defined as advocacy. This slide highlights the many tools available to advocates, the education and advocacy.
We have one more slide.
There it is. Oh, advocacy tools, yeah. There it is. Some of the advocacy tools here are meetings and communications with government officials, where we share evidence-based policy approaches. We share success stories and personal testimonies. We share best practices. We share nonpartisan study, research, and analysis. This is what the CARE Coalition does when we go to DC. We have testimony, we provide public comment letters, we work in coalitions with other organizations, we have sign-on letters, and we nominate global health officials to advisory committees and along with grassroots advocacy. So this is going to be, I'm going to turn this over to Bill.
So, in a way, we are all advocates at one moment in our life or another. So we're going to kind of give a little bit of definitions and just want to be aware that in our audience, we have you all as individual members, and that's one way we can participate. Some of us, well, all of us here that are in the room are part of the council, so that's another kind of role. And then some of us work for community organizations at the civil role, and then some of us work for civil service. I think I'm the only one still, oh no, Thomas and I. So a set of categories. So when you move to lobbying, you actually get specific that you're asking an elected official who has the power to vote or to allocate money, to allocate a certain amount of money for a cause. So that's what moved it over to lobbying. And so there are kind of constraints on that. So if you are an organization and you are fully Ryan White Part A or federally funded, you can't go as a representative of your organization. You can, however, go in your personal capacity. We all can go in our personal capacity. So the other pieces before that were where the advocacy was, everyone's welcome to do it. However, if you do work for CBO, you want to make sure that you are, if you're going to speak for the CBO, of course, then the organization has given you permission to do that. Similarly, with the Planning Council, you all identify yourselves as members of the council, but unless you are a co-chair and kind of nominated to speak on behalf of the council, you should be as an individual as opposed to be for the Planning Council, because there might be a lot of diversity about what people feel about a given issue. So the important thing about lobbying, again, just to recap that, is we're trying to get people to vote in favor of a policy or funding that's in our position. Are we good? Do you guys have the video queued on the budget process? That's what we could talk this through, if not.
Is it?
It was the one that you guys sent from the previous year, is that the point?
Oh, did you want to talk it over there?
It did not.
Oh.
We can talk it through. We will talk it
through. Cool. That
works. So the first step is the president's office did all of the budget, which is called the skinny budget, historically because it has top line, it doesn't go into a lot of details. I mean, jokingly now it's called the skinny budget because aside from defense and other sorts of things, the money is very small. But then the next step, so that kind of signals the president's kind of priorities and ideas about the amount of funding.
then the House starts their process of deliberations about that in reaction to what the president has provided. And then shortly thereafter, the Senate also starts. And then at a certain point, as those two bills develop, they cross talk as much as possible. And then when they both kind of settle on something, then they actually get together and do what's called a reconciliation between the two different processes. And so that eventually leads to a bill which the president then has to either approve or veto. And then if it's vetoed, there's a potential of an override if there's enough votes. So that's kind of the process of the budget. The budget is supposed to be finalized September 30th. So just to make it fun. So remember, the CARE is March 1st, right? San Francisco General Fund and many city and county governments go on July 1st, and then the federal budget goes in September.
In the last number of years, you haven't met that deadline. You've had to continue negotiations until they're able to reach a budget.
So, this is a whole lot of not great news. So, but it is a starting point. And so, this is kind of what's in the presidential skinny budget. So, on April 3rd, he released this. So I just want to do a couple of things that are not so bad and some things that are bad. They're specifically HIV. I did put in for you guys the delectation, the CDC side, and then some other programs. And you might remember, this is the starting point, so this is the most conservative because our president, because of financial spending, is the most conservative. So this budget gets bust up. So what's interesting is to compare it to last year. So for, you know, for Ryan White, there are five parts. You all know we all in San Francisco get Part A, B, and C through federal government. And then there's an organization that gets more Part C, and then Part D, which is women and children, UCSF gets. And then we also would get, we also get EHE, both on the prevention and the care side, that's ending the HIV epidemics. And then one organization gets Part F, that sometimes community-based organizations do. So Part F is additional dental reimbursement for dental schools for people with HIV. And they also have some special projects that either the city and county could apply for or a CEO community-based organization. So we get a lot of those parts. The good news is what's proposed is flat funding for A, B, C, and D. So Part F funds, as I mentioned, the dental programs, the training, which I didn't mention, AATC, so that's kind of a group of, it trains all sorts of professionals to do HIV care. And so that's what's currently on the job. That's slated for litigation. So now we'll be in the process for people advocating about the importance of that. We also zeroed out the Minority AIDS Initiative NAI fund. So it kind of took it out of the budget. Unclear about whether it's going to just not be NAI dedicated or actually going to be a reduction. My reading is actually is a reduction, but I'm still trying to get a final sense on that. The budget is the top line, a little hard to tell. Maybe if you guys know better than me, I appreciate hearing it. And so the other thing that's really going to be changed is under Kennedy, our Secretary of Health, there's a real centralization of services. So HRSA, Human Resources and Services Administration, is moving under what's called AHA, which is the Administration for a Healthy America. So it will be interesting to see what happens over the time for that one. In the interest of time, I'm not going to go over this the CDC prevention side. And then there's some more other things. The other thing to kind of highlight, that, yeah, the CDB, the HOPO grant, similar to last year, is also slated for implementation. However, you all heard me just say about plus up 4.5%. So that's an example of how we're going to start important, why advocacy is really important. We had to fight for a lot more last year to get that done. Okay.
So I'm going to talk a little bit about CARE. So over 30 years, the CARE Coalition's proactive national leadership has focused on how the components of Ryan White programs can best address the service needs and improve the health status of people living with HIV. So we have three people on the floor here tonight. Me, Bill, and Lance are all on the board. The CARE Coalition members include consumers, grant recipients, and providers of the Ryan White Part A, Part B, and Part C programs, as well as the Part F education and training centers. CARE is a national coalition advocating for sound public health policies and resources to meet the critical health care and supportive service needs of people living with HIV disease in the United States. So again, we're an advocacy organization, not a lobbying organization. As you know, the Ryan White HIV/AIDS program is one of the most successful public health initiatives. It serves over 566,000 people living with HIV, and 89.6% of these clients achieve viral suppression. Key to this achievement has been ensuring voice of consumers and the community are included in advocacy work. In 2022, the coalition embarked on a strategic planning process to better align its advocacy priorities with the current state of the HIV epidemic in the US. The plan included creating a new vision and a mission. The new mission reads as follows. The CARE Coalition is a small national membership organization rooted in the Ryan White HIV/AIDS program. We work to end the HIV epidemic by ensuring equitable access to welcoming, high quality healthcare and supportive services. We advocate for robust federal funding and community-based responses to end the epidemic. This is a photo of the CARE team from 2024, where we met Representative Jasmine Crockett. She's from the Texas 30th Congressional District, I believe. In this picture are, of course, the San Francisco contingent, which includes Ernest from SFAF, myself, Maria, and Bill from SFDPH. We are joined by CARE members from the New York City, Atlanta, and Hennepin County. CARE held a retreat in 2023 as part of the recent retreat developed an advocacy agenda. A key component of the strategic plan was the development of a new advocacy agenda. And in 2023, through a community-driven process, CARE developed that agenda to ensure a system of care and services that promotes optimal health care for all. So our goal is to ensure diverse health service access, delivery, and equitable health outcomes. We advocate for high-quality care and treatment services for all populations impacted by HIV, especially marginalized people faced with institutional and structural challenges and discrimination. The six advocacy points include ensure the voice of community remains a central component of the federal response to the HIV epidemic in the U.S., increase federal HIV/AIDS resources, reduce the administrative burdens and increase flexibility of the Ryan White HIV/AIDS program and EHE, ending the HIV epidemic initiative, promote the integration of federal HIV care and prevention efforts, address homelessness and the housing needs of people with HIV, and focus on social determinants of health and promote a systematic approach. So therefore, we're looking at other ways to modernize the implementation of the Ryan White program. If the political landscape improves and there is significant community interest and support, the CARE Coalition will engage in its historic role of convening the community to develop a reauthorization plan. Bill will be
So this kind of shifts over to a little bit some of the activities that we do on a regular basis. So Lee is kind of a champion or ranger of us getting to the results. So what happens is you tend to club together with people in your congressional district or with the senator in your state. And you get on their agendas, and usually you speak to their health staffers. We develop kind of talking points about the importance of funding. And then we also try to get a cognizance what's going on, how is it looking. What's kind of extraordinary, Lance also has championed this for many years. What's always interesting is how often the staff changes over. So a lot of this education and re-education, and I'm convinced that the country is run by very old people on one side, and they're often still run by phenomenally young people. And we're absorbing everything, but it's kind of extraordinary to see the change over. It should be the importance of educating and re-educating and re-educating. Sometimes I think it's at work that I feel a little bit like a Vita Perot, and you have a suitcase in another hall, you're just kind of doing your roller work thing. But I think there's huge value, and I would encourage you all, if you ever had a chance to do it, to see how government happens. It's pretty cool.
Government does that too in the local level for super, especially when there's a new change in supervisory activity.
They organize what hasn't been frequently calls with planning households, but there is really a mechanism at the federal level, so we also try to organize educational stuff with
of different planning councils. Marcus participated in some of them. I think he'll probably do another one too. We're very fortunate that you guys can allow you to play a huge role, both in terms of advocating for stuff, but also in terms of getting the intel of what's really going on. So we're very fortunate that Aaron Fox, who do pro bono, so they about three times a year, sometimes four, they give us policy updates and funding updates.
There are
updates, yeah. We also initiated meeting with FIRSA HAB, HIV Hero, so the people that fund us for A and for EHG, but also similar stuff for the other parts. And we just kind of share information. We have a very constructive relationship. Surface kind of policy needs and challenges that folks are happening, and also able to sometimes ask questions they may have about best way for policy. We gather just information from talking with other constituents and their coalition. We also participate in the Federal AIDS Policy Partnership, FAP. When they try and determine the numbers to ask for, a lot of huge policy wonks there. So we have people that participate with us in designing that. And we also often, like, we kind of commandeer space the conferences to talk about the work that we do and give presentations. We had a pretty extensive needs assessment for Ryan White Part A grantees, and we presented actually and got a pretty good response. And then the next thing that we do is we partnership with NHO. I swear, you got to work in HIV about 5 years to get all the acronyms. It's National Association of Community Plans and Health Organizations. So they're yet another organization, of which many of our benefit providers are community clinics or members of. So in terms of the partnership, that's our way of making sure that also the smaller jurisdictions that can't afford necessarily a care coalition, that their voice gets heard, maybe anywhere from once every month, once every quarter. So we're now kind of every 2 months. Again, we take the voice from that and try and elevate it up to HRSA HAB. So that's the third one there. And then we really look for like emerging issues. So for instance, these upcoming scientists are very interested in programming and time things. So to make sure that one emerging issue we fund, if we fund, say if we fund Charles to do 8 times of his time doing anything we work, we are sure from looking at his time sheet and the funding source that he actually is doing that. So it's really a way to build accountability, so not paying for something else. And it's a giant thing about our CBLs, but so we're trying to figure out the least famous way to do that. And then we share lessons learned and best practices. In fact, on this very issue, we had three different EMAs share about how to do this and whether it was supposed to be nearing from our agency. Next slide. So the other thing that within the quarterly calls with FIRSA HAB that I mentioned to you, these are kind of the things that we identify. I won't necessarily rehash that, but these are the ways that we work. I think it got very excited there. Go back. Mm-hmm. Go back. And that's like that.
You missed one.
No, it's missing a bunch of slides. It's three. Okay. So I'm just going to briefly share. So Coach Karen and I have been engaged in that. I'm going to share this with you guys, but I want to, you know, if I asked who's currently doing advocacy, it might have been a much smaller number of hands raised, and it could eventually become everyone raising their hand to get their advocacy. So these are ways that you can kind of join up. These are mostly lifts from their websites. So you have it in the PowerPoint presentation. This is one of the very largest. It's a large grassroots organization. They also fund AIDS Watch. And so they do a very similar thing to what CARE does. They go on the Hill and they speak to HIV funding reports to legislators. Consumers and as well as folks at work, but primarily consumers. Next slide. Save HIV campaign, they're kind of amazing. They come every week. They are really grassroots, if you can get a fascinating kind of weekly meeting. And it goes
really from federal level stuff, stuff rolling out of the states, to local stuff. They did a tremendous amount on AIDS Day, and I don't know if you guys all remember, the globe has gone virtual. So they did a tremendous amount of stuff, particularly in the South, about bringing visibility and lots of leadership of folks that are HIV positive, folks that are people of color, folks that are both of those things, kind of really driving the process. So if you're looking for a lot of fun organization and real sense to get a sense of what's going on nationally, I recommend signing up to join them. Next one. And then there's FAP. And this is kind of where the policy models go. I mean, I'm not going to go to places, but these are the folks that really have developed the stuff that helps us determine the budget, the ABAC there, AIDS Budget and Appropriations Coalition. And we also have an aging and HIV working group, which I recently found out about, so I'm going to be exploring with them. Probably this is a little more geared towards organizations to join, but like, I think if you're an individual, you're yeah, that as well. And I think that concludes this. Yes.
Here's a couple more quotes that we thought would be important to show regarding our presentation. We want to open up for discussion after this. So I'm no longer accepting the things I cannot change. I'm changing things I cannot accept. That's from Eugene Davis. Every moment is an organizing opportunity. Every person a potential activist. Every minute a chance to change the world. From Dolores Huerta. American majors, usually the civil rights that is the best.
These are both area, Bay Area activists, yeah.
So, but again, we felt this is really important given the times that we're going through to talk about education, advocacy, and lobbying. And we're wondering if you have any questions about the presentation, or if you'd like to know more about. Yeah.
It really comes from ignorance, for real. Do any of these big HIV/AIDS organizations or etc. Do us to lobbying, being you know people that they get paid to lobby on the? Yeah, they don't.
I'm sorry, I didn't quite understand.
Do any big HIV/AIDS organizations do also pay lobbies?
Hey, okay. Well, we get ours pro bono. There are usually for these organizations less use of lobbyists and more use of professional staff that actually go and do the advocacy on the hill. So, Save HIV campaign, a funding campaign, they have lobbyists, but they do have people that do the same role as lobbyists. They just go on the hill and advocate, but they don't necessarily come with funding. So that's more than what we can do, at least that's what I can see. We do have a lot, we do have a lot of these. It's, you know, these lobbyists firms make tons and tons of money, so it's a difficult problem. So.
Yeah, so talk a bit about
the screen.
Lobbying work, they're well-versed in Ryan White. And they actually provide the pro bono work for us. They believe in HIV advocacy and HIV funding. It's, so thank goodness that they provide a pro bono work for us that really helps with our care budget. But we really rely on their expertise because they have contacts in Congress. They deliberately and actively cultivate those contacts with heads of committees and other representatives in the House and the Senate and with their staffers. And it's because of those contacts that we're able to, that I help arrange the meetings that we have when we go to DC. But we really rely on Fox. They're an amazing organization. We really appreciate their pro bono.
Stop sharing. So,
you know, I have to thank you and correct me if I'm wrong, but Ernest Hopkins is a perfect example. He's with the AIDS Foundation, and one by half of the AIDS Foundation. Ernest Hopkins, well over 20 years, has been a great lobbyist for San Francisco, the state of California, across the nation. And incredible how lobbyists work on behalf of the community. And it is through the AIDS Foundation. And the work of Prince Hopkins, for instance, We as community members are often invited to enhance that body work that they're doing by being invited to tell our stories and connect the policy pieces that are being created, the bills that are behind it, to actual living people. And of course, standing over there with the HBE Advocacy Project, given the foundation, it's been phenomenal on our local level and on the state level, and thank you, network on this level as well.
Yeah, Ernest used to be a director of the CARE Coalition. We rely on him because of his historical and institutional knowledge. It's been amazing to be able to, because he has his own contacts too. He keeps those contacts and makes new contacts all the time. And he goes to Capitol Hill quite often to be able to, you know, talk about why and why what we feel is important. We every year develop talking points and hotline numbers that we present to contacts that we make in Congress when we go make our field visits. Where we feel Rhinebeck funding would best serve our population. Of course, those numbers are never really met. Of course, you know, there's cuts all across the board. I'm trying to remember why Rhinebeck's been flat-funded for so long. But you know, it's important that we provide that information so the representatives and their staffers know where we stand and what's important to us.
Things are beautiful things to see one side, but just a reminder to see that sometimes it can be also the well-being of the aid agency or organization, and we have to be careful with that. Just, you know, not just the beautiful side of it, but also be careful with the other side.
Sure. So I want to acknowledge Richard's cutting in.
Hey, Richard.
Hey, Richard.
Hey, Richard.
Hi. Hi everyone, am I off mute? You can hear me.
Oh, it's Philip, yes.
You can hear me?
Yes.
Okay, hi everyone. I just wanted to check back in and say hello. Thank you for having me back. And I just wanted to mention that Lee, as always, the hard work that you do. I'm glad to hear the language again. And if you could go back like two pages on that thing that you just had about the HIV, the program there, I wanted to point out the first paragraph, if you could put it up on the screen, when you started to describe what they do, the HIV network, I believe, or it was?
Oh, the CARE Coalition or one of the other organizations?
Yeah, towards the end, it was one of the last pages. It described what they do, and I just wanted, the words really jumped out at me.
Okay. Will you maybe the same HIV? We'll go through them and then you can see which one.
It was right towards the end of Lee's presentation.
Towards the end of Lee's, okay.
Yeah, towards the end of Lee's. Lee's was doing it.
All right. No, that's
yeah, it was further down, one of the last pages. Let me see. In and around there, one of the first pages that was descriptive.
That's the CARE Coalition. Is this the one?
Maybe further down towards the end, like I said.
Okay, that's all CARE. The next, these three slides are CARE. Keep going down. Keep going. This is Nature and CARE. So I think this is where you were talking about. So there's AIDS United.
Yeah, yeah. Even more so. Yeah. Even the next page, maybe. I'm going through a lot here. I guess I like that first paragraph, but is there another one after this?
That's the last one. The one before, right, here.
Okay, further back, maybe 12.
Okay. This one is 12. 14. Okay, 12 here. CARE.
Yeah, it was in and around there. I apologize, but it was a paragraph that led in and say what they do is, you know, advocate for funding, harm reduction, substance abuse policies for people who have no voice. Like, it was all simple language, but like all the things that we need, advocating on state and federal levels, getting jurisdictions and getting politicians involved. It was really demonstrative of like what we all do and care about, even more so than the scientific tool one. just all the things they brought on board really made sense. It was excellent language. I was really glad to see it brought together like that. Thank you, everyone.
You're welcome, Richard. And I cut and pasted from the website. So I mean, you can also get a sense of their style. So if that's important to you, if one of the languages called out more than another for simplicity, maybe that's a better fit if you want to do volunteer.
Yeah, see, I was right here. Members of the Save HIV funding campaign are united in our commitment to protect federal funding, infrastructure supporting access, then all the HIV, STI, viral hepatitis, substance use prevention, all the things that matter, and the continuation of HIV research through collective action and the engagement of community members and legislators. I couldn't have said it more succinctly.
Well, there's
one that's beautiful, strong language, and I think that's just a summary of everything we try to do. That really struck me. Thank you.
Sure. Well, Richard, they also have a weekly update conference call, and they get very local, what's happening in the different states and stuff. So if you want to keep your finger on the pulse nationally, they're probably the one to join.
Thanks, everyone.
Sure.
Good to see you, Richard. Yeah, exactly. I agree. Any members of the public have any comment or ability?
Thank you, everyone.
All right, let's take a back by three.
Yeah. She like she told me about it. I'm like, oh, I'm
So we appreciate that, and we do look at that each time that they're filled out. So, yeah. Two for no strangers to us. So thank you for being here. And
we've got a handout that Lance is handing out. And I've also sent it electronically back to you for the. So this is the annual HPA's provider network presentation to the Planning Council. The HPA's provider network is pretty much what it sounds like. It's a network of HPA's provider organizations here in San Francisco. So it's inclusive of the variety of community-based organizations as well as UPSF. And we meet monthly, council members are always welcome to join our meetings. And one of the main things that we do every year is advocate for HIV services for care and prevention in the city budget. And so usually we come in and we present our priorities on what we are advocating for in the city budget. That usually includes advocating for cost of doing business increase, For the Brian White programs that otherwise we wouldn't get one, and always advocating for backfilling and cuts to the Brian White program. This year is a little bit different in that this year the city is facing a substantial budget deficit. And so where we are right now, the mayor has asked, and we've heard this from Bill earlier in the meeting, but the city, the mayor asked all of the departments and agencies to identify budget cuts that they could make. And so the impact of the organizations that are funded by the Department of so there was a $17 million cut to community-based organizations, and then an additional $20 million cut to community-based organizations. So where things, the process stands right now, the Department of Public Health has made their recommendations for how that $37 million community-based services will happen, and that has gone to the mayor's office. The mayor has between now and June 1 to put together his budget, and then June 1st, it will go to the Board of Supervisors. They then have several weeks to deliberate over the budget, make minor changes in it, and then vote on a final budget that then goes back to the mayor for him to sign before the end of the fiscal year, which is the end of June. So that is the timeline that we're operating in, and we're right now, we're in between when the DPH has made their recommendations and when the mayor makes his. So where are we with the budget cuts? And so one, and I know Bill sent this information out to the full planning council, and it's also announced it several times here, which is the very good news that the department, well, there's two pieces of good news on the HIV health services side. One is that we were facing about a $600,000 cut in our Part A formula. The state office of AIDS has been able to use Brian White dollars that come through the state to backfill that, and made a commitment that they will backfill that for all of the upcoming cuts that we know that we're going to be getting in Part A. So there is no Part A cut that the mayor needs to backfill. Secondly, the department chose not to make any cuts to the general fund amount that's going to HIV health services. And that is also very good news. So not only is there no federal cut, there's also no local cut for HIV health services. Prevention, on the other hand, is a different story. And so I'm going to talk about sort of two categories of cuts, two main categories of cuts. One is the cuts to HIV prevention, and then the second is mostly behavioral health services cuts that include really substantial cuts to harm reduction services in San Francisco. Harm reduction is a core part of our HIV prevention, even though it's no longer funded through CHAP per se. Well, some of this actually isn't CHAP, but so anything you want to add on that? And then let's start right through some of the cuts. So when we look at what's been proposed to be cut, and you've got the information in, that was in the chat update that looks at the health access points. So there are a few things that are getting cut in the health access points. And again, you can look at the chart that was on the chat update for more of the details on that. One is at 6.6% across the board cut in all of the health access points. That has helpfully been, thank you, PH staff, for your advocacy on this, been pushed to year two of the budget instead of the first year, which happened not this coming year, the year after. Which a deferred cut is always better because it gives you more time for the city's economy to bounce back a little bit more, and secondly, for us to fight the cut. There's also been substantial cuts in capacity building services that were built into the health access point budget. And those come in two main pieces. One is funding for capacity building around the Black African American HIV prevention services, and the other is around HIV prevention for the transgender community, capacity building around how to appropriately provide those services. So those are the two chunks of capacity building that have also been targeted in this. Then an additional cut to the HIV prevention clinical services at Strut that the San Francisco AIDS Foundation provides. There's an additional 15% cut on top of the 6.6% cut to the AIDS Foundation. The stated reason for that is because SFAF is in the process of trying to set up Medi-Cal billing for those services, but I will say those billing is not happening yet. That's well down the way, but nonetheless, EPH took a preemptive swipe pass for that. So those are the cuts to the prevention side of things. The cuts to the behavioral health services and harm reduction are mostly coming out of Alliance Health Project, AHP, and SFAF, and include cuts to the syringe pickup crew that both responds to community concerns about improperly disposed of syringes, as well as targets particular neighborhoods to go through. They also do a lot of outreach and naloxone distribution. AHP has a clearinghouse that's been providing harm reduction supplies, syringes, naloxone, et cetera, to, in particular, to the HAPs that are not eligible for getting those supplies from the state clearinghouse. But were, as part of the HAP process, asked to provide those supplies. So those cuts will also have an impact on our ability to get harm reduction and HIV prevention supplies out into the community. The other area that is important to name is cuts to organizations that serve LGBTQ populations, particularly LGBTQ health, and in particular our trans communities. And that includes both SFCHC, as I mentioned, but also Lion Martin, Lyric in the Castro that serves youth, and then a couple of health clinics that serve young people that include a lot of queer young people and include HIV prevention. With the Michael Baxter Clinic at Larkin Street and Huckleberry House are both being targeted for closure. Are both being targeted for closure. Which I will say, Michael Baxter was a member of this planning council, which is how I got to know Michael Baxter. He was a person living with HIV. He was on this council. He was a fierce champion for services for young people, and we wouldn't have a lot of the services for young people living with HIV that we have in the city if it weren't for him. So just to put some of this into context, that I know you're all very familiar with this, but these cuts to harm reduction, to trans services, to HIV prevention are all coming at exactly the same time that the federal government is targeting those services. Both SFCHC and the San Francisco AIDS Foundation are part of a lawsuit that is honestly the only thing that is preventing the Trump administration from cutting a lot of our funds over their gender ideology and DEI criteria. There have been more recent attempts to cut HIV prevention across San Francisco, again, including our organizations, also DPH and UCSF. Again, that's being held at bay by lawsuits at the moment. And the Trump administration has, you know, been very clear about their desire to eliminate gender-affirming care as well as services for trans people generally. And this is also part of a national attempts, you know, the state of Kansas, other states trying to either eliminate funding, public funding for services for trans people or criminalize not just trans services, but trans existence as well. So it's that context where the feds are going after all of this. They're actually, in terms of harm reduction, there were two letters that came out from SAMHSA, the Substance Abuse and Mental Health Services Administration, on Friday, going after funding for certain access programs, mental tech trips, a number of things, saying that you can't use SAMHSA money for that. So that is all the context where, the feds are going after this stuff. And now our local health department is going after it as well. And so that is the sort of context in which happen is asking, and what we would like to invite the planning council to join us, is to ask the mayor to stand with all of these communities, to not accept these proposed cuts from the department, but stand up with the queer community, with people with HIV, with our trans communities, with immigrant communities. They've already set aside money in the DPH, added money to the DPH budget to address federal policy changes around Medicaid, Medi-Cal. We feel like these are also federal policy changes that are attacking the same communities that we come from and that we serve, and sort of figure out how to use that money to help avoid the necessity of cuts to these services and programs. So that is, again, usually we come in talking about we need more services for this community. We need more mental health services for long-term survivors. We still need all of that. But what we need is to ensure that our HIV safety net, which is already pretty fragile, which is already under attack, doesn't get further flooded by local.
Thank you, Laura, as always, the super comprehensive overview. I guess what I will add is that, again, we're in a unique moment right now. And I think as an HIV community, I wanted to point out, I mean, my fellow board members from Care Coalition, thank you. I mean, Bill is our leader, are the chair of the Care Coalition, and we lead so much of the policy efforts for us here. But what I would say is, like, we have such impact in making sure that the resources here in San Francisco from the federal government flow to us, right? The community does that. The community has ensured that the Ryan White Part A cut, and we're going to see more of it, right? This is the first of 5 years that we're going to see a significant decrease over the next 5 years, but we got this upcoming year's cut resolved because of the advocacy. And I will also say, on the HIV prevention front, we were at risk of losing
push at the blood thinner
grant. But it was also community that rose up and really made sure that the CDC funding was also in place. So we could have seen such significant with respect to prevention and care and treatment. But the community really was involved to ensure, and these organizations, AIDS United, Care Coalition, I'm the chair of the NMAC board. So NMAC,
I'm going to have to,
sorry.
So there's all of these efforts that are really trying to ensure that our HIV safety net continues to be funded. And so when the city of San Francisco starts to whittle away at the services, the funding that is supporting the safety net services, it's that much more frustrating and angering. And why we look to not just happen, but our partners on HIV Advocacy Network, Getting to Zero, we partner with all of the different systems and organizations and coalitions in San Francisco to ensure that all of the work that we have put together to build the safety net system it's fragile. It's a fragile system that we put together for the most vulnerable. And I would add that when we look at the HIV prevention cuts that are in year two, but if they're in year two, they're cuts that are coming down that we have to pay attention to. That some of those cuts are specifically targeting the Black community and the trans community. Those are exactly where we fought and advocated to get the resources there, because we know that's where we need even more support. We know that our EPI data says right now that if there is any rising numbers in new HIV infections, it is in the African-American community. It's in cis women, cis African-American women. And so this is the moment where we actually need to double down on ensuring that all of what we put together stays together. And so that's our plan. And then I guess the other thing to say is that, you know, it's not just the CDC, HOPWA, Ryan White, HIV funding. Now, when we look what is under attack is also harm reduction. That's what Laura was sharing, and harm reduction, of course, SFAF, AHC, Alliance Health Project, and BWC, are being impacted, which starts to get away at dismantle the lowest barrier service for our community. And I think sometimes we take it for granted that San Francisco is a harm reduction city, that we believe in harm reduction, and right now that's being whittled away. And that will directly impact the HIV safety. It's part of the safety net, but I think we've taken it for granted. Nice thing. So right now, what we have the part of our ask of you and the council is that we really ensure that it's this patchwork of funding, that we have created a pretty phenomenal system of care for everyone that could be left behind, if not for this pretty impressive but fragile system of care that is funded not only by the city, but as Laura's saying, we bring in federal dollars directly to our organization. Right? So that's several of us here, but it's also why we're getting attacked and why we're in lawsuits against the Trump administration, because all of those federal dollars that also are part of the safety net are also at risk. And so many points of attack that we're trying to defend ourselves against. We're just trying to make sure that San Francisco does its job to protect us. That's right.
And I'll say there are two other things that are just sort of on Kavanaugh's agenda. One, there was a request that AIDS Go Pro Panel and San Francisco AIDS Foundation put together around DAS, Disability and Aging Services, trying to get them to devote some of their funds to HIV and aging services. That hasn't gone anywhere, in part because DAS is also cutting their budget, but that is something that SFAF and LRP and HAPN are going to continue to be pushing on, because Disability and Aging Services has not really been funding the kind of, given the numbers of people aging with HIV, that system needs to be paying its fair share and picking up its share of services for people aging with HIV. The other thing that I will also say that's been coming up among HAPN membership, and thank you, Bill, for your work with us on this, is around safety and security for our staff. You know, DPH is in response to the murder of a staff person at 486, DPH appropriately has been looking at policies and protocols and investing $15 million in increased security and safety services. That's great. And those of us who work in community-based organizations who are now also facing the cost of adding security officers, adding other protocols, figuring out how to help make sure that our staff feel safe, and as well as our program participants feel safe accessing our services. There's no money in the DPH budget for the community-based organization side, even though we serve the same people, we have clinics, we have social workers, we have staff who deserve protection as well. So trying to figure out how to make sure that, and you know, none of us have contracts that include any of these costs, right? So how do we make sure that the nonprofit community-based organization part of the network is also getting the resources needed to provide some assistance? So those are two other things that are also on our agenda that, that don't necessarily make it here, but that we will continue to be advocating. Are there any questions, Lee?
A couple of things. One, I just want to come in and have the because I don't know if the council really understands the amount of bonding that you guys devote to the board of supervisors to make sure that they understand what important to the community. If you're there during the budget meetings, you're meeting with supervisors and the staff to make sure that they understand what our priorities are. And then secondly, I was wondering if you can kind of talk a little bit about this administration's priorities, right? For making all of these cuts, what are the administration's priorities and where is that money going to?
Yeah, I mean, I can't necessarily say, I mean, so one is there was a document that was from the mayor's office that was a directives to the Department of Public Health in terms of what priorities the mayor's office wanted to engage to use in their budget cut. Both had, you know, target dollar amounts and some priorities. And so, you know, there are some things in there that are very much in line with HIV services, including a focus on, you know, behavioral health and ensuring people have access to substance use disorder treatment. There are some things that were very antithetical to our work, including a critique of harm reduction that's pretty misplaced, and B, not recognizing the role that harm reduction plays in HIV prevention, viral hepatitis prevention. And so, you know, I appreciate that the TPA sort of did the best they could to kind of keep an eye on some public health goals while also trying to address the mayor's priorities. You know, I mean, I think just from reading the paper, the mayor's been very clear that one of his priorities is very much sort of phrased as cleaning up the streets and a sort of very law and order one. We know that the police department and the fire department are getting substantial budget increases, including really substantial salary increases for folks who work there, which is great. I'm happy that they're getting salary increases, but it really feels like it's coming at the expense of basic public health safety net. So that's sort of my interpretation of them currently based on what I read in the paper, but
so then also, so this is the mayor's budget, right, with the cuts. Now the work goes to the board of supervisors, and this is where you guys still come in play to work with the supervisors, you know, letting them know what the point was, and they have the ability to change that.
Well, this it's still in there right now. We still have time, right? The mayor, we want as much of this to be resolved or changed in the mayor's budget. That's always our focus until June 1st.
Okay.
So, but simultaneously, we are meeting with our folks at City Hall, the Board of Supervisors, so of course, President Nadelman's office and Supervisor Chan's office, who's heads budget and finance. So those are two folks that we are making sure to keep and simultaneously meeting with the mayor's budget director and her team. So it's still that. At June 1st is when we then see what happens, and then it's that whole month of working directly with the Board of Supervisors through whatever kind of ad back process we may see, which is to be determined at this point. We don't have more information on that. The other thing I guess I'll share to Lee's point is that, you know, it's not just DPH. What I will say is what we saw with DPH was as much of a community engaged process. And so there was some attempt at, of course, involving community. I think we did our best to stave off more that could have happened. But here's where we're at right now. It's not in isolation of every other department that is making cuts as well. So I do think it's not just DPH. There's all the other city departments that are also cutting, that are also impacting all of our organizations throughout the city. And so we're trying to, of course, as always, we work with the HIV coalitions as the budget advocacy lead, but we're also on all of the other networks of budget coalitions throughout the city to ensure that we're also involved and making sure that we're making those connections, because there's hurt that's going around in so many different places within the CBO community of San Francisco.
The city's budget deficit is what?
It's like, I want to say it's like in the 800 million over 2 years. I mean, we got a better result, so it's not up to the $1 billion, but it's within the $800 million deficit over the next 2 years.
And it, you know, just part of what Lance is saying, like, we know that each of the organizations have been getting cuts from, like, the Office of Economic and Workforce Development, the Mayor's Office of Housing and Community Development, HRC. So we're trying to keep an eye on those as well. The bulk of the funding for our programs, though, comes through DPH, and so that's sort of the been the focus, but we know that there are cuts in other parts of the system as well. And it's, you know, one of the things that, you know, the city is appropriately setting aside money to deal with the implications of changing federal policies on Medi-Cal eligibility. And that's going to be happening in a number of different ways. One is people with immigration status that the federal government doesn't like are being put off of Medi-Cal. That is one of the places where, you know, that's why we have a Ryan White system of care to be able to pay for their services for people with HIV. But we don't have, you know, on the HIV prevention side, it is our health access point. It's our safety net that's providing HIV prevention services. So, and the other thing that's going to be happening is that there are going to be work requirements as part of eligibility for Medi-Cal that people will be expected to be demonstrating that they are working, volunteering, participating in something. So those are exactly the kind of programs that a lot of the Office of Economic and Workforce Development funded, a lot of like your training programs and job placement sorts of things that would be really great for folks who are facing these kinds of work requirements but are also being cut at the same time. So that's part of what's been so frustrating about this, that the city is saying they're setting aside money to deal with the federal policy implications of these things. But then when we try to say these are some of the implications coming down the road, they're like, no, no, we're setting this money aside every year to deal with it. It's like, oh, this is a federal policy change implication right here.
Well, and we're not disconnected from everything that we're saying, our communities, right? And so next week, there's even a huge advocacy day in Sacramento to actually try to push back against these Medi-Cal cuts for the UIS population. And so that, to me, if we can win there, it needs to be a win here, right? If we're helping to correct for this at a state level, then it needs to show up. And in terms of alleviating the cuts that we are right now experiencing.
Right. So one of the things that we've been working on at the state level is trying to ensure that people with HIV are given an automatic waiver from the work requirements.
What are we doing that with CalFresh?
Yeah. So we're continuing to advocate for those sorts of things to make sure that people with HIV are affected as little as possible by these bad medical decisions. Bill.
I just wanted to take advantage of that segue. It is related to what they're talking about is unsatisfactory immigration status. So California was a Medi-Cal expansion state that was expanding to people who were either undocumented or not so far along as to be qualified for federal benefits. They stopped that. Now they're trying to kick people off the rolls that are high. So the important thing is there's no lapse. So those of you who may know someone who is either undocumented or not legal permanent resident, it's really important that they don't fall off the roll.
So the DPH clinics, and I think a lot of the community clinics are doing a ton of work to make sure they can stay connected, but it's really important because what's off. So we want to keep this and mitigate. But the other thing I would just add to I don't want to become a DPH apologist, so not hold to that. But what I will say is what's caused the implementation of the OBO and it's just opened up, I think, about $400 million a year of cuts that just keeps flowing. So just to give a context of all of the different something on parts or performing. So PPH is about half the budget of all the programs. So PPH is not having to sort of all of that. It's maybe spread across multiple departments. So just even this is not saying this is okay, but if they're doing a little more context.
Yeah. No, and I was just sort of thinking through, like, I mean I guess both the budget work that DPHS found, like, worked through is sort of based on the assumption that the cuts are gonna happen as they say. Right?
Mm-hmm.
So for example, if the advocacy on the state level vis-a-vis Medi-Cal is practical, my assumption is that the county budget here is essentially gonna benefit from that.
Yes. Yes.
And it is a conversation with them, then not helping, sort of like it's X, then Y.
And then, you know, I think the health department is appropriately making decisions based on a worst case scenario. So hopefully, if you know that money isn't needed, if we can keep people on the Medi-Cal rolls, then that money would be available to help fill some of these.
Yeah, and they there's a group that all they do is a quarterly look at the budget forecasting and revenue and the constant HS. They basically attack. So I'll give an example. So the hospital, if you were longer patients would be leaving sooner, so that that's what I'm checking. That the taxes were looking better in some areas, so they're constantly looking at your net still. I'm sure they're
but I would say the Medi-Cal for the QIS, the unsatisfactory immigration status community, it was bleak until actually more recently. Like, things are changing constantly at the state. Like, we didn't think there was any possibility, and then they're starting to be opening. So or some sort of breakthrough, you know, and that happens at the state legislature. So we're taking advantage of that.
And I will also say part of the advocacy that we've been doing at the state level, the state is still sitting on this large pot of AIDS Drug Assistance Program rebate dollars. And so as part of our advocacy with the state to get that money reinvested into the community is also looking at where are cuts disproportionately affecting programs or services, trying to get that money sort of redistributed back to the counties, potentially as sort of like a supplement on top of the, you know, the support needed in HIV prevention and the HOPWA dollars that each county already gets. So trying to get that money reinvested, as well as trying to work with the State Office of AIDS to look at things like, okay, if people are not going to have Dentical or dental care anymore, is there something that we can do to provide dental insurance for people with HIV so that they can continue to have dental care, for example? So we're trying to identify what are areas where, you know, particularly for people living with HIV, where they might, they're not just falling through the cracks. There's a crack opening up and we're not in front of them. How can we start filling that in and avoid people lose access to services? So,
particularly. I'm just thinking, yes, at least two are major players.
So what I think this is important for the planning council to understand is these budget numbers and the cuts that they come from them are important when we do our prioritization and allocation at the end of the year. It's important for us to look at where those cuts are really happening, like I mentioned. So we may have a goal, maybe that we'll be just dealing with, with actual allocation, but we deal with, these numbers are real world numbers where we can also have problems.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, and you did play a role, like when Bill came to this council 2 months ago and said, if there are cuts in HIV health services, how should we implement them? And, you know, this council deliberated and made a decision. And so, you know, you've already been playing a role in that.
And I will say that we were on one of the HIV health services because they really wanted to be specific programs or programs. But they were, the director side was pretty over soliciting and then folks in the prevention services check also trying to model them the same thing. So, this pain shared one more issue that it's my oldest one that's happened that they may, of course, agencies put smaller.
And what we point out always too is like Ryan White organizations get a 9% correct, which is woefully low.
Yeah.
When at 15% is also woefully low. It doesn't cover any organization's administrative costs. And yet we do it. Right, the 9% is never enough to cover everything that we need to do to run an organization. But then it means that the HIV community of organizations has to even make up those monies year after year after year. So even the 1% is amazing. Of course, we need whatever it is, but it doesn't cover the cost of living that compounds year after year. And then when you're just locked into a 9% indirect rate for the HIV services that are funding the most complicated safety net system, it's baked in. There's a challenge, and so we are also trying to, kind of challenge that at the mayor as well to find
that level. But that looks like at the agency level, our staff are not getting raises, or they're being cut. Things are being cut, and that affects the rest of the staff.
We're behind the eight ball when it comes to other comparative to other social services organizations in our community.
Well, I don't want to push that. So
it seems that things are getting sort of like, I mean, the budget situation in the city is not great. My sort of sense from the sidelines around the work that the DPH has been doing around prepping this is trying to sort of both spread it out and minimize the impact both on the contract side, but also internally. And I mean, I guess sort of like as you engage in a conversation around this, it's sort of like how the, you know, pointing at other things that could sort of where money could be saved, and or is this more sort of like this just needs to be protected or stopped?
From the HAMA perspective, we're saying, you know, stand with our communities, stand with these cuts. Our public health infrastructure in this entire country has been under attack, certainly in this federal administration. I don't want to see us lose any public health function. I think it is essential to keeping San Francisco healthy. I think it is a core part of making our economy good, you know. So I don't want to see any TBH budget cuts, period. From the HAPN perspective, we're really focused on the HIV harm reduction and LGBT health pieces, as because that's our sort of purview, but I think, you know, there's not a lot of, you know, superfluous services left in the city. We haven't had substantial budget increases in the health department. We've seen budget cuts year after year. It's not as bad as it was in 2008, 2009, but, you know, some of the services that we lost back then, recession, have never come back. In the city, especially
behavioral
services. So,
what I would say too is like the when we're fighting at a federal level for the money that comes to San Francisco, it's not just funding CBOs, it's funding the DPH infrastructure as well. Like, so we are mindful of that. So, all of the advocacy we're doing is actually across the board. That it's funding physicians at DPH, it's funding the public health infrastructure, the surveillance and reporting infrastructure for the city of San Francisco. And the CBOs, you know, so I just think that there's a unique role that we are playing as advocates to support our city's infrastructure, not just the CBOs.
Yeah.
It's the entirety.
Sure.
We travel down to this Bellevue project in order to provide the best care and services with the limited dollars that seem to be the small ones. Swimming pools, the luxury pool turning the swimming pools. We see where the priority is. That are providing similar services of which you come to one in order to cut down multiple salaries of administrative staff in order to keep enough staff available to service the number of clients we have out there?
Yeah, I mean, it's a good question, and I think, and, you know, certainly we've seen a number of mergers, ADF, KRC, Baker Places, right, is, I think, the most recent one, you know, SFAF historically, you know, like Stonewall used to be a separate organization, Magnet used to be a separate organization. You know, we've seen a number of their mergers and so on in the nonprofit world. One of the things, though, is that unlike the corporate world, where there's often a lot of overhead, I mean, as Lance was just saying, like, you've got 9% indirects, like, you've got very, very low overhead in the nonprofit world. So the savings are actually pretty limited, you know, and so, and they're very expensive to do mergers and a lot of change management and so on. So they often, they're not, they're worth, I think they're worth doing if you've got mission alignment and there's other sort of reasons to do it. But I think the savings are very, very short term and very thin for what that for nonprofit mergers. But it's worth thinking about.
And I would say that just that I would just add is that the amount of collaboration that our organizations are doing together is also unprecedented.
Yeah.
Like, I do think that we are so closely tied. It also means that we're not duplicated, right? We are making sure it is no duplication. And we are making sure that we are supporting each other and knowing what we're doing, referring, you know, back and forth and building together. So I really think that we're at a different place too around that. And the HAPS helped us do that, but now, so that's the last thing we want to do is start to build at these collaborations that have been really, really producing some phenomenal programs of our community.
I want to ask my colleague Andy, who's many of you know runs the HIV Advocacy Network, to talk a little bit about how people can get involved in this and some of the stuff that's coming up in the next week.
And should I pass these?
Yes, and then I also, so traditionally, the HBA Community Planning Council has taken a vote to enforce county budget priorities. And so we want to ask if that allows us here, and so I'm planning out our ask of the Planning Council, and sending out our ask of the Planning Council that you join us in asking the mayor to stand with us. All right, Andy.
Thank you all. Okay. Can folks online hear me all right? Nikos?
Great. Okay. It's great.
Yay, thanks. Okay, so maybe y'all, I just wanted to really quickly, you already heard what's at stake, what the impacts of these cuts are going to be. We know that these are political decisions. Budgets are moral documents. We just heard what's required in order to create social change. And I don't have to tell y'all, y'all build this incredible system of care that is a model for folks across the country. And now the question is, what are the next steps? What are we doing? One of the big things that I want to encourage folks to do right now is if you can take out your phone, we need to send emails into some of these key decision makers, the mayor, the board of supervisors, Director Zog, this whole group of folks, because they need to know that our community is engaged, we are watching what's happening, and we are demanding that our community services be protected in this moment. It's really disappointing and frustrating and infuriating to see in a moment where the federal government and the Trump administration is attacking our communities and defunding care, critical care for our folks, that we are seeing leaders in the city of San Francisco that's supposed to be a refuge for our communities making decisions around cutting funding for those same communities. So even as the need is increasing, we, our political leaders, are making decisions to defund the care that folks need. So this is one really quick way. It takes like 30 seconds to fill in your information, send in an email to make sure that our voices are heard in that way.
A text.
Yeah. So if you text in two words, the phrase is five cuts, to the number 888-272-2848. We'll send you a link. You can click the link, fill in your information, and it will send an email to all of those key decision makers. Now, I want to say this isn't the only thing that we're doing. We're engaging in a diversity of tactics. We are going to show up and make sure our voices are heard. Just last week, Thursday, many of you were there. We filled up Jane Warner Plaza in the Castro, had over 80 folks. We got five kids in the media speaking out to protect critical funding for our communities, elevating our stories and the impact of these cuts. And that is, this is just the beginning. So the other thing that I want to mention, again, we're going to have a lot more stuff coming out, y'all. But the immediate next steps are we're going to have two budget town halls or teach-ins. The first one is going to be an LGBTQ budget town hall at the San Francisco LGBT Community Center. And that's going to be this Wednesday, April 29th, from 7 to 8 p.m., where we'll be diving deeper into the cuts and our strategy to win this fight. And then the second one that I want to highlight is the HIV Advocacy Network's Queering the San Francisco Budget Teach-In, which will be next Monday, May 4th, from 7 to 9 p.m., where we will be diving deeper on the cuts to HIV and LGBTQ community services and our plan to fight back through the HIV Advocacy Network. There are going to be a lot of other things that we're doing. We're going to be looking at our stories in the media. We're going to be talking to the community. We're going to visibilize these cuts for our folks and give them opportunities to make sure that these key decision makers are aware that we're going to fight back. We're going to show up. We're going to stand up. We're going to speak out. We're going to fight back. So if you have any questions, please let me know. We've got the flyers. I'm going to probably hand some out really quickly. But we would love to have you come to these events. You know, let's build our people power together. If you are connected to community groups, please share. Let's get as many folks involved in this fight as possible. We know that even though these, even when these cuts are proposed, it is not the end of what's going to actually happen, right? We saw that just in this spring where there were significant cuts made to the department or proposed to the Department of Public Health. that we actually were able to, through a series of opportunities to push back and sharing our stories, we were able to get back some of that content, right? So this is what is possible whenever we organize and fight back strategically. So I hope that you'll join me and involved in the fight, and I'll be in the Thanks, y'all.
Could you say that number again?
I will say it. Yeah, for sure. So you can text. You can text Bike Huts to the number 888-272-2848.
The four is kind of,
it's a little difficult to see. I'm sorry.
And I'll we'll send out some information that we'll get the information to council staff as well.
It's got a hearing.
What? Yes. Are we ready for a motion? Yeah, and I didn't realize until today that it wasn't noticed for vote. Traditionally, the council votes to sign on to have them priorities. So I think the options are either to send it to steering, although the steering isn't happening, or have a vote at the May 18th meeting. I mean, it's what
yes.
it is.
Yeah.
So I think it would be great to have a proposal, a motion at the May 18th meeting.
I'd also like to propose that a friendly addition to the wording, HIV prevention, harm reduction.
Great.
Any other thoughts?
Questions?
Yeah. One little comment here. I mean, I'm assuming that this is sort of like for somebody and so on. I'm just wondering if, you know, like the youth clinics are in a whole, you know, being sort of like within the DEA budget, whether that should be part of this. Partly because it, in some ways it's sort of like, you know, the kind of sort of going.
Yeah. I mean, it's a good question. And DPH staff, but they are part of community-based organizations, right? Like, so it's, you know, Larkin, CPH staff operating in a large context. So are you asking us to lift that up higher in our
I'm sort of wondering if that should be a part of the advocacy, being that, you know, in some ways it's sort of like on the one hand you have sort of like the cuts to community-based organizations and people who are on the contract side of things.
Mm-hmm.
This is sort of like could view this as sort of like DPH.
Yeah.
Like reworking within
the hash. Yeah, I mean, and I know that, yeah, and I know that they're DPH staff and DPH is saying they're planning to move them elsewhere.
Yeah.
But I think what will be lost will be services for young people accessing Larkin Street, for example, who will no longer have a youth-specific clinic with youth, culturally competent providers. There in the Larkin context, for example. So I hear you, and I still think it's enough part of the community set of services.
Yeah, I appreciate that. It's, and I appreciate both of you coming here and continuing this work. I always clearly say that landscape would be very different. That happens with both of you as well. So I always just value the DPH kind of duality around lobbying based on the lines. Always just.
And I mean, I also want to recognize, like, we are acutely aware that DPH staff fought hard for these programs, right? And fought hard to prevent these cuts. And, you know, DPH staff are also being affected by these cuts, by losing, you know, colleagues.
But in particular, you know, we know no one at DPH wanted to make these cuts. No one at DPH is enthusiastic about this. And we know people fought really hard to keep these services. So it's in a spirit of partnership that we take the advocacy where DPH can't, and they do the advocacy where we can't. So all in the service of making sure that our community members have the services.
We'll jump in to say, what I can say is that all of these programs that are being looked at for cuts are in the DPH side. There's a ton of work to go to make sure that clients are not going to be lost and that kind of stuff. So there's like four programs both to be checking through the templates and they're already for people in the DPH. We make sure this goes through to their Patreon. So this is not to say that we actually didn't do this, it's just to say it's not like, you know, not hearing about each other.
All right, thank you both. So before we break, I just want to kind of acknowledge that number 15 is the next meeting date. That the time should actually be 4 to 6:30 instead of 4:30 to 7. So it's just a little bit of a clerical error. And thank you all for staying in the meeting and engaging and fruitful conversation. We'll see you next week.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye, everyone.
Bye. Hold the phone.